Well, according to a new UN report, the world is not ready for the impacts of climate change, including more extreme weather and the likelihood that populated areas of the planet could be rendered uninhabitable. The 772 scientists who wrote and edited the report argue that the world leaders have only a few years left to reduce carbon emissions enough to avoid catastrophic warming, which would produce significant sea level rise, large-scale shifts in temperature that would dramatically disrupt human life. Well, let's check in with Dr. Tim Ball in a moment and see what he has to say about all this as we talk about the deliberate corruption of climate science, his work on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. Tim Ball with us, renowned environmental consultant, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. He served on many local and national committees. And Dr. Ball's extensive science background in climatology, especially the reconstruction of past climates and the impact of climate change on human history and human condition, make him, of course, the ideal head of the Natural Resources Stewardship Project. His book, The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Tim, first of all, hello. Welcome to you.
Well, thank you, George. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yo, me too. Okay, this United Nations report that basically says we're up a creek. What do you think of that?
They're up a creek because their science is wrong, and the public are becoming aware of that, as you see all the polls showing climate change, global warming of no concern to the public. But the bigger problem is that the government are cutting their funding, and so they're raising the ante. That's really what's going on here.
Nobody wants pollution, Tim, of course.
Yep.
Are they using pollution as that stepping stone to convince the world that climate change is happening because of us, because of man?
Yeah, the pollution thing is sort of a like the magician, you know, keeping you distracted. And it's part of the whole environmental paradigm shift that occurred. And one of the things that happened with that, George, was that we needed environmentalism. And because it's just foolish to soil your own nest. But what happened was a small group of people saw environmentalism, and particularly global warming and climate change, as a vehicle for a political agenda. So they grabbed it. And in doing that, they took the moral high ground on the environment. The truth is we're all environmentalists, but these people claim they care and we don't, and it's just an outrage. And so as they started to lose the battle of the science of that, they raised the ante. They did it in several different ways. One was that they, when the science showed that the temperature was going down while the CO2 was still going up, they switched from global warming to climate change. In other words, they moved the goalposts. Instead of going back as they should do and say, hey, my science is wrong because all my predictions are wrong, they simply moved the goalposts. And the other thing that they did was introduce this idea that it was pollution. I mean, you hear Obama talking about carbon pollution. And that is so wrong on so many different levels. I mean, apart from anything else, he's really talking about CO2. CO2 is a gas, and it's essential to plant life and therefore oxygen and human life. It's a gas. CO2 is a gas. Carbon is a solid. They're not the same things at all. And then to talk about carbon pollution, of course, this implies that it's soot and it's dirty and all the rest of it. So they keep moving the target and raising the ante with no justification other than they don't want to let go of their political agenda, that they want people to be scared and they want us to surrender all control to them. And you see Obama doing this even though the U.S. Congress have not supported. In fact, the U.S. Senate voted 97-0 against Kyoto. And Obama is just ignoring all of that and going directly through the EPA and imposing all sorts of things on CO2 because, as I said, it's for a political agenda. It's not about the science.
And let's get into some of the various aspects here, Tim, with what we have with you in the 2 hours remaining in the program. And first and foremost, climate change. Let's get your take on just what you think is happening to the planet. Let's not talk about the cause yet, but just what is happening to the planet?
Well, and that's really the heart of the issue, is what is natural? Because one of the things that they've developed is this idea that every single weather event is somehow unnatural. Therefore, the implication is that it must be caused by humans. But you need to know how much the climate changes naturally all of the time. And people don't understand that because we're educated in the Western world, at least, and I got to tell you, I've worked with Chinese and Russian climatologists. They've got a very different view of things of the world. But the Western world is built around the Darwinian view that's called uniformitarianism. This is the idea that change is very gradual over long periods of time. And that's how we're educated to see the world. It's how Western science sees the world. The reality is that the climate changes dramatically all of the time. And what's going on right now is well within natural variability of climate change. And just to illustrate the point about how dramatically and quickly climate changes, just 18,000 years ago, which in the history of a 5 billion year old Earth is yet not even yesterday, it's two seconds ago, 18,000 years ago, you had an ice sheet covering almost two-thirds of North America that was larger in area than the current Antarctic ice sheet. And that's just 18,000 years ago. And all of that ice melted in about 6,000 years. And it certainly wasn't anything to do with humans or Barney Rubble driving cars or anything else. And if just to, again, to put it in perspective, in my lifetime, I've lived through four climate changes. Because from 1900 to 1940, the world was warming up. And it warmed more in that period, by the way, than it did in the 1980s and 1990s. But the world warmed up to 1940. From 1940 to 1980, it cooled down. From 1980 to 1998, it warmed up. And since 1998, it's been cooling down again. So that's four changes just in my lifetime. And when you look at longer periods in history, you can see these changes in climate that go on naturally all the time.
Well, it is so dramatic, too. We're having these extremes, the coldest winter in 20 years.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they're just huge. To me, we might be in the middle of a little ice age.
Well, of course, we actually were in a little ice age. The temperatures reached a low in the 1680s. In 1682, for example, there was 3 feet of ice on the Thames River in London, England.
Gosh.
And the world's warmed up since then. But the only reason that you think there's more extreme weather is because that's what the media and what the IPCC have been pushing. And it's a bit like, George, it's like you're introduced to somebody, and I'm sure this happens to you all the time because of the programs you do. You're introduced to somebody, every time you turn around, there they are. They were always there. They were just not part of your world. And now, because the media have picked up on this and are being played by these people with their political agenda, every time there's a weather event, I mean, it's like with Sandy. They were desperate to make it a hurricane. It never reached hurricane force. So what did they do? They called it Superstorm.
Superstorm. Yeah.
Superstorm, and that, by the way, that's another of the giveaways. It's not just in climate, and it's throughout our society now that you label things or you label people. For example, anybody that dares to ask a question about Obama's, birth certificate or anything else, you're a birther. So you're lumped into this group of a lunatic fringe. And this is the game that they play. So it happened in the climate area. Because when I started out in the 70s, global cooling was the consensus and the threat. But anyway, when the global warming started, anybody that dared to question was immediately labeled a global warming skeptic. And ignoring the fact that all scientists are skeptics. So anybody that dared to question the science they were presenting was marginalized, because to the public, a skeptic is a very different term than it means to a scientist, right? And you see that in Al Gore's thing about, oh, the debate is over, the science is settled. Well, that's rubbish. The science is never settled. Scientists are always questioning the science and challenging it. But when we pointed out that, well, you know, all scientists are skeptics, so being a global warming skeptic is perfectly normal, but then it changed. It became climate change, and now they up the ante because, oh, well, the world's not warming anymore, and CO2 is continuing to rise, so our hypothesis is not working out, so, oh, well, we'll call it climate change. And the people that then question that, again, like me, was, oh, you're a climate change denier, with all of the Holocaust connotations of that term. And this is the game that they play constantly. And of course, it's the way you marginalize people that are daring to ask questions.
When did this first start? When did they start pushing global warming?
Well, the global warming issue started in the 1980s. It came out of actually the whole idea about humans destroying the planet, and therefore, we need one world government because nations individually can't deal with it. So we have to have one world government to deal with these global problems, which is absolute nonsense. But that grew out of the Club of Rome in the 1960s, and they listed in their 1994 report, they listed things that they said would unite us. And there were, of course, air pollution that you mentioned. And then there was overpopulation. Of course, that's an underlying theme in all of this. There's too many people. And then global warming was listed at that time. But it had already been developing in 1988 when the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change was set up. But it wasn't set up specifically about warming. It was set up about humans affecting the climate and controlling the climate. Maurice Strong, who is right at the heart of all of this,
right,
and he's hiding out in China now because, of course, he and his son and Kofi Annan and his son made money off of the oil for food in the Iraq crisis. But Maurice Strong, who was a member of the Club of Rome, said, and this is in a book by Elaine Dewar called The Cloak of Green, he said, you know, the problem for the planet are the industrialized nations, and isn't it our responsibility to get rid of them? Now, if you think about that, how would you go about doing that? And the answer is, of course, that if you could, if you isolate CO2 as a byproduct of these industrialized nations, and then show that it's causing runaway global warming, You can then effectively get rid of those industrialized nations. And that's what we see going on, the replacement of alternate energies that are a disaster. And by the way, the one place, and the listeners would be interested in going looking at the province of Ontario in Canada, Maurice Strong ran Ontario Hydro, which was the public utility that produced energy for that province. Ontario is in severe energy shortage problems because he shut down the nuclear power plants, he closed the coal plants, and he put in wind turbines.
He was running the company.
He was running the company. So if you want an object lesson of what happens if you follow what Maurice Strong was pushing through the United Nations, he put it into practice. And I say the province of Ontario are going to be paying for 40 years for the damage that he did.
Tim, let me get your take on this. I mean, there are some dedicated meteorologists and climatologists who do not see it the way you do or I do, but they merely believe that man is creating this. Now, let's assume for a moment they are dedicated, hardworking scientists. Why do they feel this way and you don't? Where's the difference? And let's assume they're not out to profit on this.
Well, I think that, it's a very, very interesting question. And of course, as Machiavelli said, you know, that if you want to deceive people, there's always lots of people willing to be deceived. And I'm not saying that they, as you said, they're well-meaning people. But I think the quote that I have on the back cover of my book, speaks to this whole thing. This is a meteorologist, a German meteorologist, who's also a physicist. And he said, 10 years ago, I simply parroted what the IPCC told us. One day I started checking the facts and data. First, I started with a sense of doubt, but then I became outraged when I discovered that much of what the IPCC and the media were telling us was sheer nonsense and was not even supported by any scientific facts and measurements. To this day, I still feel ashamed that as a scientist, I made presentations of their science without first checking it. It was very cleverly done, because the one thing you've got to hand Maurice Strong is that what he created was sheer brilliance. It was evil brilliance, but it was nonetheless brilliant. And I've talked to people that went to school with him, grew up with him, worked with him and for him, and they all said that he's a superb organizer.
Mm-hmm.
And he set up the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change through the World Meteorological Organization, the UN agency. And
he must have had their ear.
He had their ear, yes, absolutely. Because, of course, after he made that, when he made that quote to Elaine Dewar in the book about, the problem of the industrialized nations, she said, well, why don't you run for politics if you have that concern? And his response was probably the only honest thing he ever said. He said, you can't do anything as a politician. And then she said, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to implement this idea? He said, I'm going to go to the UN where I can get all the money I want, not be accountable to anybody. And, of course, he headed off to the UN and set up the United Nations Environment Program, UNEP, and the Rio Conference in 1992. And out of that came the United Nations Climate Change Commission, and they defined climate change for the IPCC to study. They said, only look at human causes of climate change. So they deliberately narrowed their focus.
And they skewed it.
You can't possibly know what the human effect is if you don't know how much the climate changes naturally.
True.
And that's what happened. So Strong then, through the UNEP program, he controlled the political side of it through the NGOs and all of that, the Agenda 21 and so on. But on the science side, through the IPCC, he directed them to only look at human causes. And, of course, that narrowed it right down to CO2. And that's why it became the focus. Well, all of these national weather agencies that make up the World Meteorological Organization, like NOAA, like the UK Met Office, like Environment Canada. These are bureaucrats that belong to this organization, and they decide who's going to serve on the IPCC. And, of course, it gave Strong direct access to the politicians through the bureaucrats.
Hold on, Tim. We're going to come back and talk more about this incredible story. We'll be back. We're going to take your phone calls next hour with Dr. Timothy Ball as we talk about climate change. And there's much more to talk with him about when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Tim Ball with us. So, Tim, how did we change the verbiage, too, from global warming to climate change? What happened there?
Well, and actually, there's an admission of it. You remember those emails that were leaked from the University of East Anglia?
Yes, a couple years ago.
Yeah, okay. Well, one of those emails actually says, you know, the global warming thing is not going over very well because we've had a couple of cold winters, and people are starting to make fun of it and ask questions. And so they suggest maybe climate change is a better phrase to use. Thomas Huxley 100 years ago said, the great tragedy of science is a lovely hypothesis destroyed by an ugly fact. And of course, the hypothesis was what's called the anthropogenic global warming hypothesis. That is that humans are adding CO2 to the atmosphere, and as CO2 increases in the atmosphere, it raises the global temperature, and therefore we will have runaway global warming because of human industry, what Maurice Strong identified. And starting in 1998, and there was a peak temperature year because of El Nino, but then after that, the temperature started to decline. And so they realized that they couldn't sustain their claim that they were 95% certain that CO2 was causing global warming, because the CO2 continued to go up while the temperature started to go down. So they switched from global warming to climate change, and of course that's what it's been since. And climate change was a lovely catch-all, because you could say, well, anything, whether it's getting hotter, colder, wetter, drier, we could all attribute it to climate change, which is caused by humans. For me, I've said for a long time, like saying that climate change is like saying, you know, women have babies. Tell me something that I don't know. This is incredible. But that's how that came about.
Well, then it was probably smart on their part to just make that change, because the warming end was kind of foolish, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. When you're but you see, what should properly happen is that when scientists create hypotheses, and they do it all the time, that's how science advances. You create a hypothesis, but what happens in science, the scientific method, is you immediately question and challenge that hypothesis. You try to disprove it, not prove it. But what they did with their AGW hypothesis, they have continuously tried to prove it and attacked anybody that dared to question or try to disprove it, as is the proper scientific method. And Richard Lindzen at MIT said 30 years ago, said that the consensus was reached before the research had even begun. And so they deliberately trapped themselves in a corner, but So instead of going back, once the evidence wasn't agreeing with their hypothesis, they should have gone back and said, well, maybe there's something wrong with our hypothesis. We need to change it. They didn't. They moved the target by changing the names. And, of course, that was because the whole thing was political in the first place. And that's another example, by the way, George. They came out very early Gore had it in his movie where he say, oh, you know, there's a 97% consensus of scientists. Wow. Yeah, what's that got to do with anything? Consensus has nothing to do with science. It's like Einstein said, I can have 100 things that show I'm right, and if somebody comes along with one thing that shows I'm wrong, the 100 become meaningless.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, and so I knew the minute they started using the word consensus that this was proof positive that it was political. And in fact, there were three major petitions signed by skeptics. One was the Oregon petition, which ended up with 35,000 people listed on it, Nobel Prize winners. I said, no, I won't sign it, because saying there's a consensus that's proving it is no better than one that's disproving it. So it never should have been about consensus. And by the way, another example of how they've cheated, two people, Lewandowski and Cook, from Australia, they came out with a study that said another 97% consensus. When they actually got the data and started digging into it, and Steve McIntyre, who was the guy that broke the hockey stick, which was an example of how they literally rewrote history.
Yeah.
But McIntyre looked at this survey that these guys did, and it turned out that only 0.4% of the respondents said that they considered that global warming was proven. They was totally corrupted, the bit of science. And that's still being debated on Anthony Watt's website, What's Up With That. So this went on all the time of creating data, getting the headline with it. And, of course, as you know, if the headlines is what it's all about these days, the follow-up story never gets reported.
When we started losing manufacturing,
yeah,
was it because of the climate change push, or was it something else?
No, the loss of manufacturing was more to do with the rise of China and cheap labor. And one of the things, by the way, involved in that was containerization. People don't realize how container ships and the use of containers totally changed the whole world trade structure. The climate change issue really had nothing to do with that. That was just ongoing technology and particularly transportation.
Now let's get into, of course, what's happening to date, Tim.
Yep.
With this push. I mean, again, let's go back to the UN study that is saying basically that man is destroying the planet and we better get our act together soon. They're not stopping. They're being pretty relentless here.
Well, they've got to. Either that or they come out and say, you know, we were wrong. We lied to you. But they don't need to say that because every single prediction that they've made using their computer models through the IPCC, every single one has been wrong. And right from the start, from the 1990 report on, the very first report, and in fact, they were so wrong in the first 4 years that they stopped calling them predictions and started calling them projections. Because people say, well, your predictions are wrong. Oh, well, we're not making predictions. We're making projections. Well, yeah, what's the difference? If your prediction is wrong, or whatever you want to call it is wrong, your science is wrong, period. Richard Feynman, the great physicist, said that. If your prediction is wrong, your science is wrong. But instead of going back and checking their science and and admitting that, they just kept pushing ahead, and they're still doing that now.
Well, they are still doing that now. Now,
yeah.
Who can I say who's winning? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, it's a fair question. We might not like the term because the truth is we're all losing because of what these people have done. You know, when you look at alternate energies, the biofuels, and by the way, they've now come out and admitted that all of their data on biofuels was wrong. Well, we were pointing that out to them. There's been trillions of dollars of cost and loss of life because of corn and the price going up and people in the developing countries. But as I mentioned earlier in the program, the surveys by even the left-wing groups, I mean, the Pew Center, for example, when they list concerns for Americans in the last two elections, climate change and global warming, and sadly, even environment, very far down the list. And that, by the way, is one of my concerns, that it's that old cry wolf story that people will reach a point where they say, well, we don't believe anything you tell us, and then real issues won't get dealt with. But the public, I think, sense there's something wrong. They can't tell you why. They can't put a finger on it. And in fact, one of the things I hear so often after a presentation, George, is people will say, well, I had my suspicions, but I didn't know enough to know.
Well, and people are so desensitized now to all of this, too, aren't they?
They're desensitized. Also, they're 80% of the population are will avoid math and science like the plague. 20% are comfortable with it. So you've got 80% that are automatically going to say, well, I don't know what's going on. All I hear is these scientists arguing, and I don't understand it. It's one of the reasons I delayed so long publishing my book. And I know I'm already getting criticisms there. Well, it's not scientific enough. Well, if I made it too scientific, most people wouldn't understand it. And yet, to me, the important story is not the science, but the use of science for a political agenda, or the abuse of science. And as I said, they knew that. They knew that most of the public wouldn't understand the science, and therefore they could get away with it.
The next disaster, and there will be another one, no doubt. Yep. Are they going to take full credit for the fact that the man did it?
Oh, they're doing it with all of it. We talked about Superstorm Sandy, and with the drought in California, they've grabbed onto that one. As I said, what they're doing is they're taking natural events and presenting them. And sometimes it's only oblique hints that they're unnatural, when in fact they are all perfectly natural. So yeah, they will continue to do that. And by the way, this is the interesting thing: their science on increased severe weather is completely wrong, because they said that with warming, the Arctic regions or the polar regions would warm more than the tropical regions. Well, if that happens, you reduce the temperature difference between the polar regions and the tropics, and that reduces the energy that creates the storm systems. So in fact, with global warming as they speculate on it, you would have reduced severe weather. The reason we're getting severe weather, the cold, for example, and the White House came out with their talk about polar vortex, is because the world is cooling down. And as the cold air expands and pushes towards the tropical, when you get a tremendous difference between warm and cold, that's what causes severe weather. Again, it's all perfectly natural what's going on, but yeah, they latch on to it. The other thing, by the way, I laugh because Warren Buffett, who bought insurance companies because their license is to print money, and the insurance companies themselves have been funding and pushing the severe weather issue.
Why?
Because they stand to gain. They can charge you more money. Swiss Re. Swiss Re and all of these companies have been very, very active in pushing, and you go look at their websites. They've been very active in it and sponsoring, you know, the end of the world movies and so on. And Warren Buffett owns a lot of insurance companies. Well, he came out the other day and said there's been no increase in severe weather because we haven't had an increase in claims.
In claims. It's been about the same.
And so all of their arguments about increasing severe weather have not proved true at all. In fact, I think this is one of the lowest tornado seasons on record in the U.S. Just coming up. But it's all about creating false images, false ideas, and as I said, grabbing the headline, and then you don't see the follow-up. And the minute somebody like me comes on, all paid by the oil companies, and don't listen to him, and you know, George, when you've got John Kerry, the Secretary of State, coming out at the UN and actually saying that the scientists that dare to challenge global warming, the deniers, are flat earthers, and deniers, and Roy Spencer, who has worked with NASA, in fact, won awards as a scientist with NASA, and he said, well, if you're going to call me a denier, I'm going to call you a Nazi. Right? How dare John Kerry use the term flat earther about scientists that are asking perfectly legitimate questions? But that's part of the game.
On April 10th, 2013, Colorado State University predicted the following. 9 hurricanes, 4 major hurricanes, 18 storms in the Atlantic hurricane season. This, for the first time in 20 years, we had no major hurricane on the Atlantic side. Yep. How could they be off by so much?
Well, because if you think about it, and I just did an article on WhatsApp with that, and people can go and can look at it. It's also on my website. Forecasting weather, that is 2, 3, 4 days, once you get past 48 hours, your forecasting accuracy is drops dramatically.
Right.
And here's the ironic thing, George. If you say tomorrow is going to be the same as today, you've got a 67% chance of being right. Now, the reason for that is because a weather system takes 36 hours to move through where your location. So the chances of it being the same 12 hours from now, the probability is 67%. Well, the weather agencies claim accuracies of 70%. So they're not improving much on what you could do just by making that one statement without any knowledge. Now, when you look at 3 months, 6 months, and 12-month forecasts, they are less than 50% accurate. In other words, you could toss a coin. And I don't care whether you look at the NOAA, the American Weather Agency, or Environment Canada. In fact, Environment Canada is slightly worse. They average 48% accuracy on a six-month weather forecast. And so these are the people that are, by the way, it's the same computer models that they're using, and they can't forecast beyond 48 hours, and they can't get 6 months right, yet they're telling you with certainty, we know what's going to happen 50 and 100 years from now. And they say that knowing that every forecast they've made has been wrong. It is really incredible what they're getting away with.
You talk about the great deception.
Yep.
Is it a deception intentional, or is it done by omission?
No, it's deliberate. It's premeditated. They knew exactly. They knew that they couldn't do what they were planning to do. And they made those statements. They knew they didn't have the computer models. They knew they didn't have enough data. Because, you see, what are you building your computer models on? You got 70% of the world is oceans. You've got no data. You've got 20% of the land is deserts. You've got virtually no weather stations. You got 19% is rainforest. You've got no weather stations. And so what is your computer model built on? Well, they just estimate the weather for different parts of the world. And each model has different estimates. So there's no way that your computer model. They knew all of this when they set out to do the IPCC and do the modeling. And so another thing that's interesting, George, by the way, is that in every record that we have of any length, of any time period in history, the temperature changes before the CO2, not as they assume. They assume that a CO2 increase causes a temperature increase. The only place that happens is in the IPCC models.
The only place.
Only place.
Tim, people need information on you. How do they find you?
Well, I've got a website. It's Dr. Tim Ball, DrTimBall. DrTimBall.com, and I counter, by the way, all of the attacks that have been made on me, saying I don't have a PhD and I've lied about my policy or career and so on, and all of that is explained on there. By the way, the other thing, the attacks on me, I've had 4 lawsuits. I've got 2 very big ones going on by 2 members of the IPCC right now.
Against you or your filing?
Sorry?
Against
me.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we come back.